Okay, we've completed this, the first day of the retreat. This is day number two of the retreat. Yesterday I talked in detail about the basic method of meditation, especially going into how we have the right attitude of going in to each stage of meditation. And this morning I wanted to reinforce that by looking at the path of meditation from the point of view of mindfulness. Many of you who have meditated before in many different traditions understand that mindfulness is a big word. However, very often it is not explained all that well. And people misunderstand exactly what it is. They know they should be mindful, but number one, they don't know what mindfulness is. Number two, they don't really understand how to establish that mindfulness. Certainly the mindfulness is a crucial ingredient to success in meditation. If you don't really know what you're doing, if you can't see very clearly what's happening, then you find the meditation goes all over the place. And usually what people do is when meditation goes all over the place, instead of trying to establish mindfulness properly, they just try to establish willpower. And by just establishing willpower and struggling and striving and controlling, they get even more frustrated. And the meditation never gives that peace and that freedom and that happiness, which is a hallmark of successful meditation. They have to understand exactly what mindfulness is and how it's established. And of course, there are many, many different levels of mindfulness. And just to think you're mindful or you're not mindful is missing the point. There is just a complete lack of mindfulness. And then there's dull mindfulness, there's grey mindfulness, there's like light mindfulness, just like the day gets brighter and brighter until it reaches noon on a clear day. So too does the mindfulness get brighter and brighter, clearer and clearer, you see much more as you develop the mind. And of course, to be able to get into the deepest meditations, you need the most powerful mindfulness to see the very fine obstacles and hindrances which block you. Fortunately, the way of meditation means that we start with a rough mindfulness and we use that to overcome the rough obstacles, to increase the mindfulness, which is now powerful enough to see the medium obstacles. Then we can overcome those medium obstacles until it becomes bright enough that we can overcome the fine obstacles and go into jhana. The achievement of a jhana, or just before the jhana, when you get a stable nimitta, very bright, very beautiful, this beautiful light in the mind, that is showing that mindfulness has reached a peak. Because what's actually happened there is you've overcome the hindrances which weaken mindfulness, which stop you seeing clearly. Sometimes it's like in the morning, you may have a shower, and then afterwards, if you're a bloke, you want to have a shave. Or you're a girl, you want to put on some makeup or something. But when you look at your face in the mirror, just after a shower, sometimes you can't even see anything because there's condensation on the glass. You have to wipe that condensation away to be able to see a clear image of your face. In the same way that there is the condensation on the mind, the old karma from the past, the way we've been working with the mind in the past, which creates this haze of desire, ill will, sloth and torpor, restlessness and worry, and also the skeptical doubt. Those five hindrances are like a film on your mind which stops it seeing clearly. And one of the purposes of meditation is gradually, slowly by slowly, eradicating that film so the mindfulness becomes bright and clear. So one of the first things I want to say about mindfulness is that it is the ability to see what's going on, to know what's going on, to be aware, to be alert. And that has very different degrees of power. And you'll find that what empowers mindfulness is the amount of stillness which you develop at all periods of the day. If you are only a little bit still, your mindfulness grows very slowly. If you manage to generate lots of stillness, then the mindfulness will grow quite fast. By stillness, it means whatever you're doing, you even walk slowly, carefully. You're not doing two or three things at the same time. When you gallop it up in the morning, you get up methodically. If you brush your teeth or have your shower, you do it carefully. And in particular, you don't waste time talking to other people, because talking to others is one of the biggest ways that mindfulness gets lost. You're not holding the energy inside, but you're letting it leak out, as I said yesterday, like a leaky bucket. But it's not just, you know, the physical words. It's anything else which draws the energy outside of yourself, even if you go into the garden, you go looking around here, looking around there. Again, you're not keeping your power inside. So imagine you've got, you know, this enormous energy and power, these great jewels. You don't let them slip out, otherwise you lose everything. So you keep the energy contained inside, inside the moment, inside your body, and in the sitting meditation, inside the mind. And from that stillness, because the mind isn't going out into the future, out into the past, it's not going out into seeing this or hearing that, it's not going out into thinking, you find the mindfulness starts to increase. And throughout this retreat, hopefully you will notice the increase in the power of mindfulness over the days. How you notice that is that you feel more awake. When you get up in the morning, you're not so sleepy. When you sit, you're more alert. Even when you eat, you tend to taste much more of the food. It's one of the side effects, one of the pleasant side effects on coming to a retreat, that the food tastes more delicious than usual. The first time I noticed this was when I was on a retreat in Cambridge as a student. Now, in those days, there was no retreat centers. The group of students who were meditators, this was in 1970, we decided to rent a group of boarding houses during the vacation, which gave us the accommodation, and there was a big enough room there where we could sit meditation. But the downside was the food, because none of us could really cook, so we had to rely on the cook of the boarding house. Now, many of you would know, either from your own experience or from the reputation, that the culinary skills of the English is around about the bottom of the league. If there was any possibility, they'd have been relegated a long time ago. They're not known, especially in those days, for how to cook. And the worst of the heap, the very bottom, the very dregs of all cooks, would be those who were employed in boarding houses for students, because we were poor. The other day I went to Christchurch Grammar School to spend a day there giving talks. And when I saw the food they were giving to school kids these days, amazing! Never get anything remotely like that when I was a kid. But this was in the boarding house, which was even worse. And so, I resigned myself to the fact that, yeah, the meditation will be nice, but the food will be disgusting. But never mind, it was only 9 days. But I was so surprised. The first day when we had lunch, it was tasty. The next day it was also delicious. And I couldn't believe my good fortune that we must somehow have got the best cook in all the boarding houses in England, just by good fortune, because I enjoyed the food. But the point was, it was not the cook's fault. The food was always like that. The reason why it tasted delicious was my mindfulness was increasing. I could pick up more of the remnant taste which somehow or other the cook had left in the food. Whatever was left there, my senses were strong enough to be able to detect them. And that's why it was delicious. It was nothing to do with the food. It was everything to do with my senses. And you will find that happens here. The more mindful you are, the more you pick up, the more you see, the more you taste, the more you know. And as a sign of that, is the food gets ever more delicious. So if you had a bad meditation, the food will taste disgusting. It's nothing to do with the cooks. It's nothing to do with the fact you've lost your mindfulness. Now that is just a simile to see just what is happening here. The mind is empowering the senses, or rather the knowing is getting stronger and stronger. It's to be able to see more and find out more. So the path of meditation is to empower that mindfulness, to make it strong so you can see what's going on. And of course, the further you go in the path of meditation, the stronger that mindfulness becomes. Sometimes it's like a simile of, like, say, going to school. When you're going to school, you learn gradually, and then you're tested according to your abilities. And then if you pass, you can go on to the next grade. You get tested at the end of that year, and you go on to the next grade. So every now and again, there's training and testing, training and testing. And it's the same which happens in meditation. You train the mindfulness, and then you're tested. And if you pass, you can go to the next level. So the very beginning is just to be in the present moment. That's a test. You train yourself until you can pass that test. Until you're mindful enough, clear enough, number one, to know what the present moment is. To know the obstacles to the present moment and be able to maintain your awareness there. It's like grade one of meditation. I don't know how many of you graduated from grade one yet. But it doesn't matter, you keep on going, you keep training until you can be aware of what this means. Why sometimes you're not in the present moment. And as I gave that clue yesterday, the reason why you can't stay in the present moment, number one is habit, because you've been used to thinking about the past and the future before you come in here. So it takes a while for that habit just to be left behind as you become used to being in a meditation environment where you don't have to plan anything. You don't have to remember anything. You're free. But more than that, it's the more happiness you have in the present moment, the easier it is to stay here. Which is why that I never mentioned yesterday that your posture when you're meditating, make sure it's a comfortable posture. If you're in an unpleasant posture, basically you don't want to be here, you're in pain, and so very often you go thinking about past and future fantasies, anything to get out of being here. So please make sure you've got a comfortable posture. We have the chairs in the back there so that you can avoid the discomfort of having aching backs and aching legs. And you have as many cushions as you like. If you get here early enough, you can grab a wall seat, which is like the, just like in the aircraft, the wall seats are like the first class seats in any Buddhist auditorium. So you can lean back against something. Now, once you have that posture, you have to make sure it's as comfortable as you possibly can get. But to help, you get a little bit of happiness in the moment. I've been saying, and this is not just some new age huggy-wuggy idea, if you can just close your eyes and put a smile on your face when you start meditating, you'll find it's much easier to stay in the present moment. It's a simple bit of psychology. I first learnt that when, as a student at Cambridge, just for fun, because I could never play any sport seriously, I did some rowing. And in one race, it wasn't an important race, not like the Oxford-Cambridge boat race, when we had a long race, and I was getting really exhausted, the coach, who was always on a bicycle on the towpath with a loud hailer, shouted out at me, saying I was making a very, very ugly face. Put a smile on my face, it'll make the oar easier to pull. And of course, that was the first time I heard such advice, but I followed his advice, and instead of grimacing, I smiled. And it was true. It made, the end of a long race, when I was out of my reserves of energy, instead of grimacing, smiling did give me a boost of energy and made the oar easier to pull. Well, the Buddha said later on, which I found out, that there's two parts of pain, the physical pain and the mental pain. The mental pain was my grimace, or the result of the mental pain was a grimace. I was adding more suffering onto what I was already experiencing, making it harder to pull. And that's, sporting coaches know that you can improve your performance just by changing the countenance on your face. So if that happens in rowing, that will also happen in meditation. So put a smile on the face. Straight away you're hinting to the mind to look at the beautiful part of whatever you're experiencing, to appreciate this moment, and you'll find that you'll start to appreciate the present moment more and more. This is a simple trick of mindfulness to improve the wanting to be here. You're smiling at the moment, and the moment smiles back at you. And you don't mind being here. So the mindfulness tells you how to achieve these states. And when you pass that first test, so you can remain in the present moment, your mindfulness actually gets empowered. You've got more ability to face the second test, which is present moment awareness, just being right, so of silence, just listening, waiting, and not having all this thinking. Because sometimes people say that thoughts just come into my mind. I don't know where they come from. I know where they come from. If you're mindful enough, alert enough, you find you do invite them in because you're bored. You want something to think about. You want something to do. You invite those thoughts in. They don't come by themselves. However, if you're not mindful enough, you can't see that. You think that just thoughts arise. The point was, they came in and you never saw them coming in the door of your mind because you weren't aware enough. It's great if you can see them coming in because you can stop them before they even enter the door. You can slam the door in their face if you're mindful enough. So with present moment awareness, you are building up the mindfulness. And when you can maintain the mindfulness required to keep present moment awareness, then you can go to the next stage of silence. You understand what silence is. You know what the enemies are. And you can keep those enemies out. You can hold the mind in this moment, not by force, by just not allowing it to flow out into thought. It's like holding things back. It's like having a dog and telling it to heal. You're telling your mind to heal, not to go off running around into the world of thoughts, into the world of names and arguments. Because too often that is what creates the majority, 99% of your suffering. The thoughts and ideas in your mind, which play havoc with you, which create your enemies, create your friends as well, which create the whole world. Most people's world are created by their thinking. And now we're stopping that and coming to a reality beyond thought, or rather before thought. Before thought comes up and makes something more of what is quite simple. So the mindfulness holds the stillness. And because it's now able to do that, the mindfulness now gets a huge boost. It's like the lights get turned up in the mind. You start to see more. You can perceive more. And you can see deeper into what's happening in the mind. That's why that for a long time now I've asked people to please spend a lot of time on present moment awareness and silence before they start watching the breath. If it's a short retreat, yeah, go on to the breath pretty soon. But on a long retreat like such as this, 9 days, really put a lot of emphasis on present moment awareness and silence. It's something you can do in all times of the day. Even when you're eating, one spoon or one fork at a time practice. I think many of you have heard me teach that before. When people are eating, very often you see them eating, they've got one mouthful which they're chewing, they've got another one waiting on their spoon, halfway between the plate and their mouth. They've got another heap waiting to in line on their plate while they're looking on their plate for something else to eat. They're usually 2 or 3 spoons ahead of themselves, which is actually not how you should be eating. Just one spoon at a time. So you take the one spoon or fork of food, you put it in your mouth, and you chew it, and you don't look at your plate to think what you're going to have next. You put all your attention on tasting the food. Certainly you don't have a spoonful waiting in line. And only when you've swallowed that food do you then look at what you're going to put on the spoon next. Present moment awareness. And you'll also find that your digestion will become much better. A lot of the time, not always, but a lot of the time, people have indigestion because they're not paying attention to what they're eating, because they don't pay attention to what they're eating, they're not enjoying it because they're not enjoying it. The saliva, the bile, and all these other juices which are supposed to digest the food are not secreted in sufficient amounts. So if you can, look, very easy to prove. Now think of your favorite food. Think of it. Smell it. What's your most favourite food? Imagine it's right in front of you now, just steaming and fragrant. Now, does your saliva come out in the mouth? Usually just thinking of the food is enough to get the saliva coming. So let alone if you're actually tasting it, and right there with it, the more saliva comes out, more bile comes out, everything else which needs to actually digest the food comes out in greater quantities, so you can actually digest more. So you don't have so much problems with indigestion. So, the mindfulness there, one thing at a time, present moment and silence. You can do that while you're eating, you can do that while you're on the toilet, you can do that while you are walking to and fro, whatever you're going, or you're having a cup of tea. Keep the mind in the present moment. Keep it still. So when you're having a cup of tea, you're just having a cup of tea. You're not thinking about the test match, or you're not thinking about what your husband is doing back home when you're here at this retreat, what your kids are up to, or whatever. Don't think about those things. Just keep in the present moment. When you start to do this, you find that your mindfulness starts to increase throughout the day, because you're keeping the energy inside, and the energy builds up. And the energy of mindfulness, once it starts building up, it reaches a critical point when the whole process of meditation starts to become very, very easy. If the mindfulness is weak because you've allowed it to sort of slip away from you, then the meditation doesn't really progress as far as it might, and you get disappointed by the end of this retreat. So you keep the mindfulness inside, and you keep it getting stronger and stronger, building up, so you can see more, you can taste more, you can feel more, you can know more clearly. More and more present moment awareness, more and more silence. And then when you do start to watch the breath, it's easy to see. Not only can you see the breath clearly, but it also does not wander away so fast. You can actually see everything which is going on. You can see when the mind is about to wander off. You can catch it early because your mindfulness is bright. You're more alert. You can see what's going on. It's the same way in the early morning when we haven't got the lights on. You can't see who's in this room and who's not in the room. People can actually sneak out very easily. But in the full light, I can see everybody who's here and those people who aren't here. What I'm saying there is not sort of some fascist camp where you could be punished if you don't come to the talk. So I've already said you can do whatever you like in this retreat. The point is here, the brighter it is, the more you can see, and the more you can see the obstacles. Which is why you can avoid things when the lights are bright. So, we turn up those lights by present moment awareness and silence. And then when we start watching the breath, it's easy to see. Sometimes people say they can't find the breath because it's too refined an object and your mind is not still enough yet. The mindfulness is not strong. You'll find later on in this retreat the breath is so easy to watch. You think, ah, now I've got it, and you go home and you can't find it again. The reason is because your mindfulness has decreased. It's lost its power, which you gain here. But with present moment awareness and silence, the mindfulness increases its power. So when you turn it onto the breath, it is easy to watch. You can actually see it very clearly, like shining a light on something. You can see all its details. If you shine a light on your face, a bright light, you can in the mirror, you can see all its stubble, you can see all the pimples. In the darkness, you can only see a fraction of what's there. So when you have the bright light on your breath, you can see everything. It does actually become very interesting. You'll be surprised that every breath is completely different. The same as every human being in this room has got different features. Every breath which you ever take, each one is very different than anything which ever happened before. It's only when you can turn the lights on your mind you can actually see that. No one breath is the same as the next breath. You can see its different details. It's just like, being a Westerner. When I first went to Thailand, I couldn't tell one Thai person from the other. They all looked the same, because I wasn't used to noticing the features. But after a while, when you get to know and get brighter, You can tell the difference between everybody. Sometimes people come to one monastery and they can't tell one monk from another monk. They all look the same. But after a while you can tell their different features. And you know who's who. Sometimes you see people have twins and they bring them to your monastery for some baby blessing. I bless anything within reason. And sometimes you wonder how a mother can actually know the difference between her two children. They look the same to me. But of course a mother knows because she's with them all the time. It's the same with the breath. You know, sometimes we think, oh, it's just a breath, an ordinary breath. It's not. Every breath has a different flavour to it. And once you get into the strong mindfulness, you can pick up all the different flavours of the breath. It actually becomes interesting and fascinating. In the same way I said yesterday, last night, in walking meditation, when you're moving your feet, just one step is full of so many movements. It's absolutely fascinating. Just to one step is a whole world of experience. And it fascinates you. It draws you in. And as you begin to watch the breath, happily, not because you're forced to watch it, because you want to watch it, the mindfulness increases again. You train the mindfulness to go even more powerful. So powerful that it can start to see where the breath begins to disappear. Because eventually the breath is meant to disappear. You don't watch the breath all the way to nibbana. The breath eventually disappears as it calms down and the physical sense of touch fades away. The basic rule is that anything which is constant, after a while you cannot hear anymore. You cannot feel anymore. You cannot see anymore. Your sensory apparatus is only programmed to notice changes. If there was an air conditioner here, or there's like a hum of the road in the background which didn't change all that much, eventually your brain will turn off. Any feelings in the body which don't change, which aren't too acute with pain, they're just the ordinary bodily aches or tiredness, after a while you can't notice that anymore. The brain only notices change. So once the breath becomes smooth and even, the brain turns away from the breath. It turns off. Five senses disappear. Now you need strong mindfulness to know what is there when the breath disappears. Very often people get to that stage. The breath disappears. It's not that they're thinking about something else or they've fallen asleep. The breath has disappeared, but their mindfulness is not strong enough to see what's left when the breath goes. That's because they haven't developed enough present moment awareness and silence. They redo the meditation according to the instructions, present moment awareness and silence first, make it strong, and then watch your breath. Then it'd be easier to watch the breath, and as the breath calms down and starts to vanish, your mindfulness will be strong enough to notice what's there when the breath disappears. It's a big test in your meditation to see if your mindfulness is strong enough to notice the first pure mind object. What's actually happening there, you are still experiencing the breath, but not feeling it as a physical touch. You are experiencing it just through the mind sense. You are knowing the breath, not feeling it. It appears very different. However, it is the same. I gave the simile yesterday, just like a layman shaves off his hair and beard and becomes a monk. Same person underneath, just their appearance is different. But you've got to be sharp enough to notice that. So when we develop such strong mindfulness, we can go to the place where the breath disappears. And that's where the nimittas come up. Nimittas, these beautiful lights, are pure mind objects. And you need, by that time you've got pretty strong mindfulness. You have to have, otherwise you wouldn't see those things. If you haven't seen a nimitta yet, it means your mindfulness isn't powerful enough. It's like they're there, but the lights of the mind aren't strong enough to really perceive them. When you do develop that strong mindfulness, you know you've got that mindfulness, because whatever you see or hear, you hear more fully. You go out into the garden and the flowers are whiter, the grass is greener, just like everything has been polished and shined. Whatever you hear, the sound of the birds, you just hear so much more of what they're singing. Everything which you do is more full, more detailed, and greater depth. That shows the mindfulness is growing. But more than that, the strong mindfulness coming from the energy of the mind, as I said yesterday, is always accompanied by happiness, by joy. Basically, you become a happier meditator. Naturally. There's no trying to be something. It just happens that as your mindfulness increases, so does your happiness level, so does your joy. Whatever you look at, whatever you taste, whatever you feel becomes more pleasant as you wake up. So the mindfulness, you can tell a person's strength of mindfulness by their happiness. People who are grim and grumpy in a meditation retreat, you realize their mindfulness is not strong at all. But people who are light and happy, those are the ones whose mindfulness is becoming stronger and stronger. It's one of the signs of powerful mindfulness, just the natural happiness which people have. Once that gets very, very strong, the mindfulness can get that final test of being able to hold a nimitta without it disappearing. You see exactly what's going on and understand what this nimitta is, and I'll talk more about that later on. But this is the university degree test of your mindfulness, to see whether you can be so clear, you can see what is disturbing that nimitta, what keeps it dull, what stops it developing according to its natural process of being stable and brilliant. When that mindfulness is strong enough, you can pass that test, and then you can go to the jhana realms. That's where your mindfulness is very, 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 very strong, and lasts afterwards as well. So that's actually showing how the mindfulness is increasing. When you're doing your walking meditation, just doing enough present moment awareness and silence, keeping the mindfulness inside, not allowing it to go off onto the dinner coming next, to your bed which you want to go and sleep on, or to the business and troubles of your life. You keep it in the moment, in silence, and you find the mindfulness increases and increases and increases. And that way it develops far more power. But one of the other aspects of mindfulness, which I haven't dealt with yet, I just dealt with just how it's empowered and gets stronger and stronger so you can see more and more deeply, and how that leads to deeper meditation and also deeper insights. They always go together. Also that very recently, actually not recently, the last few years, I've been using the power of mindfulness also to keep the instructions in mind. Because it's not just knowing what's happening, it's also a knowing which is empowered by remembering, recording the instructions. Because many years ago I gave the simile of a rich person who comes onto a retreat, and being a wealthy person with lots of expensive possessions in their house, they hire a security guard to watch their premises 24 hours of the day to keep it free from burglars. And they give the security guard the instructions, be mindful. And then they go off to the retreat. And when they finish the retreat, they find the burglars have been into your house and stolen everything. And so you complain to your security guard, I told you to be mindful. And the guard said, but sir, madam, I was mindful. What do you mean? The robbers have been in. Yes, I was mindful of them. I noted them going in, going in, going in. When they took out your jewelry, I noted jewelry going out, jewelry going out, jewelry going out. When they went in again, I said, burglars returning, burglars returning, burglars returning. When they took out all of your LCD 3 meter wide TV screen, I said, 3 meter wide TV screen, going out, going out, going out. I was mindful all the time, says the guard. And of course, that is not good enough. You would sack the card for being absolutely stupid. Mindfulness is not just noticing the burglars going in and notice them going out. If you see the burglars, ring up the police for goodness sake. Stop them. So the mindfulness also carries instructions with it. You're aware of what's going on, but you also know what to do. And that's also important. So when you're aware in the present moment awareness, you know exactly what that means and what you're supposed to do. How you're supposed to avoid things of the past and things of the future. So you know the obstacles to each state. And you're on guard. So those obstacles, so those burglars, don't come in and steal present moment awareness from you. So it's as if when you start this process, you put the guards on the mind, always on the lookout for past and future, who are about to come in and sneak in. There's this little future, this idea of what you're going to do when you leave here. And as soon as it sneaks in, it's got you. You either have to throw it out, which is much more difficult than stopping it coming in the first place. Or a little idea of what happened in the last week, a funny story which happened to you. If that just comes in, then it leads to another memory of the past. And sooner or later, usually much sooner, your whole mind is swamped with thoughts of the past. The guard has allowed the burglars to come in. So not only do you create this awareness, it also carries the instructions. And to help people who haven't done this before, you can do this little exercise which I call programming mindfulness. Before you go into every stage of the meditation, you can tell yourself, or rather program your mindfulness. In the present moment, I will be aware, I will be look out for anything to do with the past and prevent it coming into my mind. I will guard the mind from anything to do with the future and prevent it. You tell yourself exactly what the enemies are and you keep a lookout for those enemies. If you program the mind clearly before you begin each stage, you find that you've instructed mindfulness and it will do its task more efficiently. If you don't give your mindfulness instructions, it just won't know what to do, and how can you expect it to achieve its goal? Doesn't know what you're supposed to do. Just like telling the guard, just be mindful. Instead of telling that guard, be mindful, if you see a burglar, call the police. Or shut the door. If you see a fire, call the fire brigade. So give it clear instructions. Don't assume the mind will know. So give it clear instructions at the very beginning. If you give it those clear instructions, it's like what I call the simile of the snake. My simile of the snake comes from the time when I was a young monk in Thailand, in these very poor monasteries in the jungle, when there were heaps and heaps of snakes around. There were so many snakes, I've got a lot of snake tales, but I won't tell them now. So many snakes were on the paths, especially at night, after you finish the evening meditation or chanting, you have to walk back through the jungle to your hut, and there were snakes on the path, which wasn't so bad, except that very often in that first year, your thongs broke or they wore out and there weren't any replacement thongs. So you had to go barefoot. You didn't even have like a thin thong to protect you from snakes. And number two, very often you ran out of flashlight batteries. I remember just going to see Ajahn Chah once. My flashlight batteries had run out and I said, can I have some new ones? And he looked at me and said, I'm sorry, you haven't got any. Ah, there's snakes and other creepy crawlies in this forest. You've got to get them. Of course, you just didn't have any, just too poor. So you had to go back in the evening just through the starlight. Sometimes when the moon wasn't up, walking through these paths and knowing there were snakes around, and those snakes, if they bit you, you were a goner. You were dead. So because of that, every time when you left the hall, you didn't have any shoes on, no sandals, just bare feet, and no flashlight. It was naturally, I programmed my mind, be on the lookout for snakes. because they were dangerous. I knew they were around. So because on the way back from the hall to my hut, which is probably maybe about 200 meters or something, I was always on the lookout, and if I saw a shadow on the path, I'd either take another route or jump over it. I didn't know whether that was a stick, just a shadow, a play of light, or a snake, but I couldn't take any chances. That way you never got bit, because I was alert to the danger. And I've used that simile in my meditation. In present moment awareness is two snakes on the path, the past and the future. So before you start out on present moment awareness, you program mindfulness. These two snakes are waiting for me. So if you see anything which remotely resembles the past, you jump over it, take another route so it doesn't grab you. If you see anything which might be the future, might not be the future, I'm not certain, you avoid it. Now when you tell yourself your mindfulness, those are my snakes, then you will avoid them, and you will be able to stay in the present moment simply because you've given your mindfulness clear instructions, not just what to do, but what to avoid. What the dangers are, what the burglars are, what's going to steal your present moment awareness. It's the same, the second stage of meditation, just silent mind. There's only one snake there, and that's thinking. But that's a big snake, and it's usually got you every time. So you tell your mindfulness, be careful of the first thought. That's my snake. If you start to see the first thought creeping up, you jump over it, you run away, take another course. But when you are instructing the mind, the mindfulness, what that burglar is, that thief which takes away your silence, and you really put a guard up against that, you'll find you'll be able to maintain silence easily. You're on the watch, alert, knowing the danger. You program mindfulness, and so mindfulness does its job. And of course, as I said at the beginning of this talk, the mindfulness gets more sharp, more bright, and can spot the tricks of these sneaky burglars. And how thought comes in, because it's a very amazing thought you're just about to have. It promises you everything, but delivers you very little. That's the problem with thinking. It's a con artist. It's a fraudster. You really think that if you think things out, you can plan everything and you can solve all your problems. But does thinking ever solve problems, or does it make more problems? Be honest. It creates more problems. It promises solutions. It just gives you more problems to think about. So when you can see just how much a fraudster that is, how it's a con, then you can actually say to your mindfulness, be careful of that guy. That's a slippery tongued, almost like a politician, can talk you into anything. Don't buy into it. As soon as it gets a foot into the door of your mind, it won't leave. When you do that, you find the mindfulness will actually keep the thoughts out, and you get into this beautiful stillness. And it's so much fun, so enjoyable, so powerful, so freeing, so releasing, so refreshing. And your mindfulness grows by leaps and bounds with silence. So when you go on to the breath, it's very easy to tell the mind what the obstacles are to the breath. Obstacles are sounds outside, feelings in the body. Because if you're watching the breath and you get an ache in the leg, you're not watching the breath anymore. If you're watching the breath and there's a sound of somebody moving, you're not watching the breath anymore, you're watching that sound. So you completely tell the mind, these are the obstacles, these are the dangers, these are the snakes, sounds and other physical feelings. If you tell the breath, you tell mindfulness that, you'll know what to look out for, and it won't go to the body. It will just discard all sounds. Remember I said yesterday about that story of those many, many mosquitoes in the forests of Thailand? My body was such a danger there. I knew it was a danger because if I went, lost my breath, I'd go straight to the irritating mosquito bites and I just couldn't stand there. So I told my mind, don't go to the body, stay with the breath. That's the only place you can get away from this irritation. When you did that, you could do it, and you stayed with the breath, and you didn't leave. And of course, once you have the mindfulness which is empowered by present moment awareness and silence, and then focused by the breath, it gets hugely powerful. Which is why we have the breath meditation as, you know, the great, most popular meditation which the Buddha taught. So once you have that breath fully in mind, it gets so powerful and so delightful. The mindfulness grows and you can actually see all the obstacles. And one of those obstacles, other obstacles, not just feeling the body or feeling the or hearing the sounds, it's also you tend to control the breath at first. Mindfulness is bright enough to see how you put your finger in there and just disturb it. So you know how you can just relax the breath and let it become smooth and easy. The mindfulness starts to see more of the breath, and that's why I say the stage of the full awareness of the breath, being able to see the breath in the very beginning of each in-breath, the very end of each in-breath, to see just this huge process which we call one in-breath. Your mindfulness has become so sharp and bright and so refined it can do that easily, because it's not disturbed by all these other things like thoughts, like sounds and feelings in the body. Just this on one thing. Mindfulness increases, you can see more, the lights of the mind are really becoming bright. You're empowering your mind. And as it starts to see the whole breath, something else happens. You notice that the distinction between in-breath and out-breath disappears, gradually fades away. So there's no in-breath anymore, there's no out-breath anymore, there's just breath. Even the beginning of a breath, the end of a breath makes no sense to you anymore. It's just breath. And the simile which is in the Visuddhimagga for this, the best simile, is that of a carpenter sawing a piece of wood. If you've ever sawn a piece of wood, first of all you can see the whole length of the saw blade and a huge length of wood which you're sawing. But as you focus in and concentrate in, after a little while you find you can only see a few saw teeth. And a little area just around the blade where it's touching the wood. You're focused in. And really you can't know whether that sawtooth is a third of the way along the blade, in the middle, two thirds, three quarters of the way, because you haven't got the end, either end of the blade, as a reference point anymore. You've just got this part of the saw. As you focus even more, after a while you can just see one tooth of the saw, just touching a tiny piece of wood. You haven't got a clue where that sawtooth is, or what part of the blade it's on, because your reference points have disappeared. Beginning and end needs a reference point in time. Even in and out need a reference point of your body as well. When you drop those reference points, all you have is breath. And you don't know whether it's an in-breath or an out-breath. That's an important part of the meditation. Mindfulness is so strong, it's dropped all these unimportant details and just knows breath. And because it's the same for a long period of time, no difference, that constancy of that feeling is what's necessary for that feeling to disappear. For the brain to turn away, or rather turn off, the sense of physical touch. So when you've got just breath, the mindfulness is just on this, nothing else, then it will disappear. When it disappears, the last of the five senses has gone. No physical touch left, no sound to be heard. Sight, smell and taste are long gone. Five senses disappeared. Now at last you've got to the real mind, underneath the five external senses. You become so still. Mindfulness is so strong, it can now can see what this mind is. If the mindfulness isn't strong enough yet, you've gone too fast. When the breath disappears, you don't know what to look at. If the mindfulness is strong enough, you see what's there. the reflection of the mind, how you see it, like looking at yourself in a mirror, is usually this beautiful light. Mindfulness is strong enough to know what's there. It's also, you can actually give the instructions to enemies, to the nimitta. Ah, excitement and fear. Because at last you've gone into some powerful states of meditation. So the two snakes which you have to watch out for at that time are excitement. Wow, at last I'm getting somewhere. Every time you say wow, it's like the game of snakes and ladders I used to play as a kid. You had to get to the 100th square to win. But at the 99th square there was this snake. If you landed on that, you went right back to the beginning again. And that's like saying wow when the nimitta comes up, or just before jhanas. You land on the 99th square, you're almost home, and you blow it at the last moment. You have to go right back to the beginning again. Oh, what a waste of time. So, be careful. You don't know wows and no fear. Of those two, it's the fear is the biggest obstacle. Which is why you really have to have very strong mindfulness and courageous mindfulness as well. To have enough faith by listening to talks such as this to know that when you get to this stage, you have nothing to fear. Just a huge amount of bliss, freedom and insight. You're on the edge of the great insights which lead to nirvana. This is what you're here for. Why you got reborn as a human being. You've come so far, you've almost found the treasure. Nothing to be afraid of. But if fear comes up, you can investigate that afterwards. You find what you're really afraid of is losing your biggest attachment, the attachment to controlling, the attachment to your will. Because that has to disappear. Before the nimitta comes up, it's the attachment to the body and its senses. That's not that hard to let go of. But the attachment to will, to being in charge, to being the one who does things, that's a difficult one to let go of. But when you know exactly what's happening, you get huge insights, and mindfulness can be instructed to know exactly what to do. You can do the job, let go, and go into these beautiful jhana realms. So, instructing mindfulness. Not just developing it, but telling it exactly what it should do at each stage. Then you have the instruction, so you don't need the guided meditation. At each stage, you have given your guidance. You told the mind exactly what to do, so it knows precisely what the task is. And that's all your mind really needs. It needs to be told exactly what you want it to do. The mind is usually very obedient if you give it proper instructions. If you just sit down and tell it, right, get into nirvana right now. Of course it won't do that. That's impossible for it. You're asking it to do what it can never do. Or if you give it an instruction one moment, then change the instructions around. Come watch the breath. No, I don't feel like watching the breath. Come do metta meditation. No, maybe I'll just contemplate present moment. No, maybe I shouldn't do present moment. Maybe I'll do vipassana. No, I won't do that. I'll do something else. If you give the mind too many orders, or especially if you get angry at it and tell it off, of course it won't do what you want. You've got to be kind to your mind. Don't try force. Don't try the stick, try the carrot. If your mind has just been really all over the place, you have to be like a father to their child, or mother to their child. They're mine. They're poor mine. Now, if you don't, if it's not too much problem for your mind, can you just, if it's not too much trouble, just watch the present moment. Just for a few moments, that's all. If you don't feel like it, we'll do it tomorrow, okay, mind? If you're really gentle and kind to the mind, it's amazing what the mind will do. So you've got to, use Australian colloquialism, suck up to your mind. And then it'll do anything for you. So if you start doing things like that, then you notice how mindfulness has to be with compassion as well, with kindness. And it's just as you would ask anyone else to do something for you. And there was a mind, there's so little few things which I can do for myself. And I've been sucking up to you guys for years, and you've been feeding me every day, so it's been working. It's not only that, I don't really mean that. What I mean is that when you're kind to others, people are kind back to you. And they love doing things for you. Isn't that just how you should work with your mind? Just be kind to it. Give it clear instructions, gentle instructions. Don't shout at it. Just gently encourage it. And your mind will do everything for you. Give it time. Be patient. It takes time to do those instructions. And then you'll find the mindfulness will grow. And with it, the ability to get into deep meditation. The mindfulness becomes a source of power, a source of insight, a source of seeing the path and avoiding all the obstacles to deep meditation. So the summary of the talk this morning on mindfulness is that mindfulness has different levels of power and you're tested at each stage of this meditation. So don't just think, I will be mindful. You have to train in mindfulness. It grows more and more powerful. And to assist that growth, present moment and stillness, present moment awareness and silence, and as many moments as you can throughout the day. So don't just keep the silence of your mouth shut. We could achieve that very easily just with gaffer tape. But keep the silence in the mind as well. See if you can find some gaffer tape to thread between your ears. So the thinking mind can shut up at last. So keep that silence and present moment awareness. Just be here in every moment. Don't worry about time. And that way you'll find your mindfulness gets stronger and stronger. And you get power then. And then use that power, the second half of the talk, by instructing your mind exactly what it needs to do. Not every few seconds. Maybe once every 4 or 5 minutes is enough. Depends on how much you can remember. How long you can keep these things in mind. Tell yourself exactly what to do. And let the mind do it. And that way you're instructing mindfulness. Know what the enemies are. What your guard of the house should recognize as the burglars, as the dangers. If the mind really knows exactly what to look out for, the snakes on the path, it will always avoid them. And that way your meditation will develop by leaps and bounds. You're becoming more methodical, more careful, understanding mindfulness, how it's developed, how it's instructed, and how it helps enormously on the path of deep meditation. So, there you go. Any questions on mindfulness? Is there anything I missed out? Anything which you didn't understand?
You talked a bit about the brain, and you also talked about the mind.
Yeah.
So the brain is that knows the senses, or what is the connection?
Connection between the mind and the brain. The mind can make use of the brain, but the mind can also be independent of the brain. But with the five senses, as we normally know them, they're connected to the brain. And so, just say there's five senses. The only way you can discern anything is discerning change. That's just sensory perception. You can only live by contrasting things. So when things become still, become unified, they next disappear. So I said last night, if you truly are one with the universe, then the universe disappears. If nothing moves, then everything disappears. So when you really get still, things fade away. So what happens is that if you keep the bodily touch on a stable object, then you can't feel it anymore. If there's a constant sound, it doesn't have to be absolute silence. There's no such thing as absolute silence externally. There's always some humming. Even the air hums. But if it doesn't move, it doesn't change, then you just disappear. Even in Zen monasteries, you actually leave the eyes open, but you stare at a blank wall. And you find after a while the wall disappears. And the wall hasn't disappeared. It's still there. All that's happened, because nothing is changing, the mind is still, then you can't see it anymore. Basically, the sense of sight, there's nothing going on there. It's been like that for a long time. So you can't see it anymore. That's apparently some illusionist. If you stand absolutely still, after a while people can't see you, because nothing is moving. Okay, going, gone. Okay, so we can now have the interviews this morning. In the meantime, those who are not having interviews, you can practice your mindfulness, make it really, really strong. And if you really do this, you'll find lunch today will be the most delicious lunch you've ever tasted in your life. That's not why you meditate, of course, but that is a nice byproduct you can look forward to. Okay, so have a nice meditation.